A couple of things before we get started. Number one, if you are a rhino, stick around. You might learn something. Number two, we call it like it is. So if you're a snowflake Democrat, you might want to leave because your feelings will get hurt. And number three, we just wanted to say thank you to this guy for all the great entertainment.
The best way to get something done, if you hold near and dear to you that you like to be able to... Anyway.
This is What's Happening America. What's Happening America. If it's happening in the United States, we're talking about it. And man, do we have opinions. Bold. Funny. And true conservatives. No rhinos here. What's Happening America with your hosts, Josh and Lauren.
Welcome back to the program. We're excited to have you here. Hey, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. We're, of course, coming to you after Christmas. Lauren, you look really lovely. I love that sweater. It's very cool of you.
Thanks. Got it in Arizona.
There you go. Well, perfect. Well, we're recording a lot earlier than usual, and that is because in the latter half of this segment, we're going to be having Harmeet Dilhon join us. She is running against Ronna McDaniel, challenging her for the chairmanship of the Republican National Convention. So we're going to ask her some questions. Lauren's going to ask her some really interesting questions that most people who interview her or interview anybody running for this position don't necessarily ask. And then we will get into the why are you running, that sort of thing. But anybody who watches this show pretty much probably already agrees with the sentiment that we don't like mix. And I don't mean Irish people. It's not that I'm against Irish people, but the three mix. McDaniel, McConnell, and who's the other mick? I'm drawing a blank.
It's Romney, right?
McConnell. There's another.
McCarthy.
Thank you.
McCarthy.
Yeah. I don't know why I was blanking on that. I know exactly why. It's because we record at night and we've had the day to get our thoughts together. And I just threw that out there. But, you know, we're going to leave it in. It is what it is. So
I heard anyways, he doesn't have the votes, by the way. January 3rd. They said he doesn't have the votes.
Well, look, I'm excited to see. Let me start here. I'm disappointed in MGT, Marjorie Taylor Greene, for trying to whip votes for McCarthy. I am extremely happy with Matt Gaetz and with Lauren Boebert for holding the ground, holding the line, and saying we're not voting for him. It's going to be the same old, same old. We need to stop, as conservatives, stop making these bad deals that never weigh in our favor. And, you know, if we have to go a couple months without a leader, then that's fine.
You know, I love Matt Gaetz. I watched a video of him last night, like punching back at the J6 committee. Mm-hmm. And I was like, whoa, because to be on the hot seat and them to be on your face like, this is an insurrection. This is that. And he's like, nope. Yeah. Like, nope. He's like, nobody, you guys didn't do your jobs. This committee is a sham. I was like, good for you. Stand up and punch back. Makes me happy.
He does. He punches hard. You know, and people can call it political theater, and a lot of it is. Look, we're not ignorant to the fact that it isn't. But I mean, I remember recently, probably 3-4 months ago, where he was asked a question, and he's like, "Nobody's trying to, you know, hook up with you women. You're all you liberal women are fat, yeah, purple-haired, ugly women. Nobody wants to have sex."
Talked
with
about this on here before.
Like, oh, that's funny. Look, you know, and it's one of those things that I think we do need both sides. We need people who are going to be more strategic, right? And whip votes. But then you do kind of need those from time to time, a Molotov cocktail.
Well, my problem with the entire system right now is how disconnected those representatives, those Republicans are with their voting base. Like, your constituents did not elect you to go, Ukraine is our top priority. Here's $1.7 trillion. Like, that makes me angry. Nobody wanted that bill passed. The only good thing in that entire bill was that the NDAA for the military vaccine kids, right? So it makes the vaccine, it pulls that requirement out so those guys can get back to duty. And I've also heard that they're inserting back pay for those that were lost, right? So they're going to bring them back. If they want to come back, I wouldn't want to come back. Like, yeah. blast off, right? So no, I'm excited for that to happen, but everything else in it was garbage. And even Rand Paul, he came out and he did his omnibus spending, and it's disgusting.
Yeah, I did. I did an episode of Uncancelable with Josh Gibbons where I went into detail, but let's give a bird's eye view of some of the things that were in that spending bill. Number one is to see if Thanos really could snap his fingers with the gauntlet on. Now, keep in mind, it's not, could these, you know, crystals actually exist that could make half the world disappear or anything like that? Like, that would be a little less crazy, even though that's just nuts. It would be a little less crazy, but it's more of a theoretical question of could Thanos snap his finger in that glove? And I don't think you need $118,000 to do it.
They do this every time. They do this every time, Josh. So they've got, you know, the rats on cocaine, or are the frogs gay, or the, you know
Beagles
what I mean?
On co- hey.
Beagles on cocaine. Well, I mean, after Fauci let them, the sand fleas eat their face, right? Like, I just am so tired. Why is it always beagles? They're super cute, by the way. Like, whatever. Okay. So yes, the omnibus bill sucks, and we're torqued about it, right? But at the end of the day, whatever, it's passing, it looks like. I don't even know how the new Congress could prevent it. It's a mess. And our leadership in the Lindsey Grahams and the Mitch McConnells are like, oh, go Ukraine. Like, no, no, you're tangling us into, I mean, Russia came out immediately after that DC disgusting display, waving a Ukraine flag in our capital. That has any other nation's flag ever been waved in our capital before? That is absolutely disgusting.
Yeah.
I mean, what a kick in the teeth to everyone who cares about the American flag, all of our military service members who fight and die for that American flag. And they're in there waving the Ukraine one. Absolutely not. Absolutely disgusting. But that was happening, and you know, they're gobbling it up. I just, it's so disgusting. We don't want to send you money. We don't want to get into a nuclear war with Russia, but Russia came out immediately after and said, after that DC business, they're like, we're done. There's not going to be any peace talks. And I'm like, oh, like, this is the only way we stay out of nuclear war is keeping Russia at the table for peace talks. But Zelensky's such a little demon troll. Oh, and he's gross. He reminds me of a demon.
Two things. So I conducted a poll on Twitter. And I said, which nation is more Christ-focused right now? And this, you go back even 20 years, this would have been a no-brainer. The options were America or Russia. And I didn't have an agenda or an opinion with it. I wanted to see what people thought. We had 419 people vote, and 90% came back and said Russia. And there was some interesting commentary. You can go and check out my Twitter, Josh_Gibbons. I think there's two underscores. To see that. The other thing I do have to do is I have to apologize because on our Facebook, you probably didn't see this, but on our Facebook, I actually had it where I posted on my personal Instagram, and somehow it's connected with our What's Happening Network.
Yeah, Facebook. I saw it.
And I posted, and I stand by what I said. I don't disagree with what I said at all. I said, America is like the guy at the bar buying all the drinks for the pretty girl. No matter how hard you try, America, Ukraine is not taking you home. And if she does, you're going to find out she's into some really messed up stuff. And I posted Ukrainian and Nazis, right? And that's just one instance. That is something that, again, the United States loves to pretend is not a problem. When we had Vice News, we had all these other news organizations before we started worshiping Zelensky in Ukraine, who were saying, hey, we've got a real Nazi issue happening in Ukraine, and they're on the front lines fighting Russia. But now that Russia is saying, hey, they've got Nazis, we're fighting Ukrainian Nazis over here, they would say, no, it's fake news, and they scrubbed the Google. They've scrubbed Google.
Totally. We've talked about this multiple times. The only update I really have on this was the SS symbol, the Azov battalion, that SS, which is historically Nazi, that symbol was on that Ukrainian flag in our capital. It's like somebody zoomed in to one of the signatures and it was the SS sign. And I saw they did like the winter solstice thing, the effigy where they were burning the Viking boat, and all like the symbology behind it. It was all that stuff is all like historically not all the Viking stuff is historically Nazi. Obviously, that's like pagan, you know, goes back farther. But the Nazis were into, you know what I, it just more proof in the bucket. But anyway, we should get to Twitter files.
Yeah, we have a lot to cover. We've got what, 10 drops since we last spoke about it, or five?
Five. So last time we went 1 through 5. This time we're going 5 through 10, and I'm going to go fast.
I'm gonna be quiet. I'm going to let you work through it. Go ahead.
I'm going to go fast. Okay, so Twitter file 6. This one was talking about FBI involvement again, so nothing really crazy. It talked about how they're banning satire. Like, they were banning satire. So there was that one account. It was so funny, and it was just, I can't remember. It was a parody account, but they banned it because they said it was misinformation. Oh, they said that they were going for every Republican vote that they get at the polls because they were a poll worker. They were going to throw it away and add another Democrat. And it was a joke. And yeah, so that account got banned. It's a mess. Okay, so that was Twitter file 6 in a nutshell. Twitter file 7. All right, so this one was kind of wild because it talked about there was a tactical operations center within Twitter that was full of FBI, ex-FBI agents. They had like 18 agents, right? And by the way, Facebook has like 150. Wow. Okay. So right now, currently, as we speak, we're not seeing anything from them because, you know, they're still caught up in the propaganda world. But Twitter releasing this information, they had 18 ex-FBI, intelligence agency employees. They all created a talk center, like a tactical operations center within Twitter, where they were communicating with one another. In addition to that, they also were handing out top secret security clearances to certain people. So like Joel Roth, they gave him a top secret security clearance. What are you talking about? Why? Okay, fine. So that happened. And then we also found out that they paid $3.415 million. The FBI gave direct to Twitter $3.415 million. That is our government paying a corporation to censor us. Now, of course, the FBI, they've come out and they're like, no, it was reimbursement costs. Like, reimbursement for what? For labor? For the FBI agents that you have on staff? Like, this is absolutely crazy. So they made the talk. Twitter pushes back in that one a little bit. They're like, we can't really find foreign interference that doesn't exist. And the FBI is like, find it. You know, James Baker's in their chili. Find it. And Joel Roth's like, we don't have any. I'm sorry. I don't know what to do. It doesn't exist. So the Twitter file 7 was kind of crazy because you're like, whoa, like the apparatus is so huge and you just didn't realize it until now. Okay. Immediately after that, I know you wanted to discuss this a little bit. The FBI came out and goes, we're not going to address conspiracy theories. Like, they called it a conspiracy theory. Like, hard proof came out in a Twitter file, you know, referenced emails, referenced documents, and they call it a conspiracy theory. Absolutely nuts.
Yeah, to me, that's absolutely insane. Like, when you see something, right? It's like, if the car across the street from my house, I saw it every day and it was red. And then somebody comes along when I say, yeah, that's a really cool color of red. They say, that's not red. This is a lie. You're making up lies. You're spreading lies. What are you talking about? I see it. We've all seen it. This isn't like something where like a handful of people are like coming out and saying, guys, you have to know about this. This is what's happening. We've all seen the documents. So for the FBI to just, I mean, that's insane to me is the fact that the FBI thinks that they can just say, no, what you're seeing, all this proof, it's a conspiracy. We're not going to address it.
So it reminds me of the No Donkey. Have you seen the No Donkey clip on YouTube? It's a Family Guy clip.
Mm-mm.
Where the guy's talking about Kevin Bacon being in Footloose, and the donkey's like, he wasn't in Footloose. And he's like, yes, he was. Like, he was the main character in Footloose. He's like, no, he wasn't. And he starts like hee-hawing every time somebody's like, no, you're wrong, with proof, right? Like, yeah. That's what I think of the No Donkey. So in the future, go look up No Donkey from Family Guy. Okay. So the FBI is crazy. Back to Twitter files 8. So this one was kind of near and dear to me because I was not happy because I spent a lot of time in Afghanistan. I spent a significant chunk of time in Iraq. Okay, so Twitter files 8 was all about PSYOPs. So Central Command, who was actually my command while I was deployed, Central Command, so they conduct all over Southeast Asia, Southwest Asia, right? Like, they're in charge of everything. They reached out to Twitter in, it was a PSYOPs operation. Most people don't know that Our military conducts PSYOPs. Ooh, big shocker, right? Okay, so they're conducting PSYOPs. They reached out to Twitter and they said, we want these specific accounts added and we want like full privileges. Give them everything, right? And so they were doing the military's bidding and they were shaping narratives for wars. So you're talking about Iran, you're talking about Syria, you're talking about Russia, you're talking about Venezuela, and even Thailand was in there. So like all of these countries, their wars were shaped based on the chatter going on Twitter. And that was injected via fake accounts that were approved explicitly by CENTCOM. Okay. So Twitter injects these accounts. They give them full access to everything. They're running around doing massive war propaganda, like massive foreign propaganda. So it was the Harvard, I want to get this right because I don't want to mess the name up, but it was the, Stanford Internet Observatory. They did some research. They pulled, wrote an article, and basically they identified very specific PSYOP accounts dealing with like military operations and war and stuff, right? And they identified them publicly. And what happened was everyone started to panic at Twitter. Oh my gosh, some of those are the ones that CENTCOM sent to us, like to give full access to. But basically the Stanford Observatory, they went after the Pentagon for it and kept Twitter out of it. So there were like emails of Twitter employees going, yay, we weren't, it like insinuated in this operation. Oh, thank goodness, blah, blah, blah. Like, you did this and you did it at the bidding of our CENTCOM, of our military, of PSYOPs, of the Pentagon. This is disgusting. Okay. So infusing themselves into war situations. Okay. So that was Twitter files. They really made me angry because I was there at the time, helping fight these wars that were being generated on Twitter by PSYOP accounts. Gross. Okay. So Twitter files 9. Now, and this one shouldn't really come to a surprise as anyone, but it's mostly referencing OGA, which is other government agencies. And if you don't know what other government agencies are, it is the CIA. It is the Central Intelligence Agency. So it talks about how other government agencies were involved. They were working with Baker. They were working with Elvis Chan and also influencing Twitter. So, you've got a litany of government agencies now that are working hand in hand with Twitter to completely censor information, totally jacked up. The other thing I thought was interesting, and we just talked about Ukraine, was that those other government agencies were flagging anti-Ukraine posts. And this is very recent. Like this is just a couple months ago. So we're talking about, you and I, even, what's happening America episode 1, having this conversation about Ukraine and the Nazis, certainly was flagged by other government agencies, CIA, on Twitter. So that was pretty gross. Okay, so Twitter files 10 is where it's kind of getting interesting now. It's something new. We're talking about COVID.
Mm.
So COVID is crazy. So they were kicking off medical doctors left and right. They even flagged a Harvard doctor for misinformation. They flagged his account. Another doctor from Boston had been on there. He made like 5 different posts that they had flagged, and they went back and reviewed it. And it was preemptively flagging because 4 of them were not in violation. So he's like, why is my account messed up? Like, this doesn't make any sense. None of my stuff should be flagged. And they flagged 5, and 4 out of the 5 were not in violation. This one is kind of crazy because it's the first time we see a direct Biden administration to Twitter telling them to censor stuff. And it's very explicitly like for COVID, it is Biden direct. It talks a little bit in the beginning about how Trump came to them and was kind of like, how are we going to deal with misinformation? But, Twitter isn't ideologically aligned with Trump. So they kind of probably just blew him off. But Biden, no, they want direct line. You can talk. Let's have COVID conversations. They were hiring. They had AI on the go. And they had subcontractors in the Philippines that were like auto flagging anything to do with COVID. And then when it would be questioned, it would go to a human. And that's where we see these discrepancies. We're now like an actual Twitter employee is now looking at this. At one point in one of the emails, and this really kind of like jarred me a little bit, was some posters, some people were saying, don't be afraid of COVID. James Baker, again, the FBI, infiltrator in Twitter, he came out and went to Yul Roth and said, hey, why are we not flagging these people who say, don't be afraid of COVID? And Yul had to be like, oh, they're not really violating anything. But he pushed to try to get them off. So that was a breath, but I did five Twitter files in one. And I urge you, please go back and read them. They are important. I don't go through them because I'm Twitter obsessed. I go through them because they're for historical context. That shapes the narrative, that shapes the wars. It shapes the pandemic. This stuff is paramount. Everyone should be reading this stuff. I mean, go through and read all of it. Don't take my word for it. They're all up on, you can just hit, go to the hashtag. You can do Twitter files 1 through 10, type the number in, and it should pop up. They're absolutely amazing.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's crazy the world we live in. But, look, I'm just happy that this information's finally getting out, right? Mm-hmm. It seems like everything that we've ever thought we've known, right? We've known without proof because it's been in our faces. We've had no way of saying, yes, it's true. And now we have that thanks to Elon purchasing. And look, I don't think he's doing it because he's a conservative or anything like that, because he actually voted for Joe Biden. He voted for Barack Obama, but he wants to have transparency on his platform. And he said, hey, best way to do this is to just air out the dirty laundry, get it all out, build that trust back. And he's seeing Twitter as becoming the number one news source. And look, we'll probably end up having it where we're having our videos and everything on Twitter, not just clips, in the near future. So it looks like they're going to open that up as well.
Well, he came out yesterday or the day before maybe, and he said, science, we do science on Twitter. And by the way, science is something to be questioned and evolving, something along those lines. And so people are like, fabulous. We're not going to masking tape all of these fabulous scientists who have conflicting information or want to question the data and we're seeing so much data trickle out about vaccines and about what they did during the COVID pandemic. And I just think that, like, it's very interesting. It's nice. It's refreshing because now we have, like, I listened to a Twitter space last night where a pro-COVID doctor was arguing with an anti-COVID doctor. Could you imagine that this time last year? They would never have allowed it.
Absolutely not. So turned out to be a great platform. I'm enjoying it. Look, I didn't hang out on Twitter before. I've had a Twitter for, I don't know, a couple of years. But I think I posted on there like 5 times in 2 years. So it's now a place that I go to daily. It's a lot of fun. And it's just a cool place. And I think it's going to get even better. All right. On that note, we're going to go ahead and take a quick commercial break. When we get back, we will have Harmeet joining us. Hey, everybody. Josh Gibbons from What's Happening America. Wanted to interrupt real quick and promote a new show that we have called Uncancelable with Josh Gibbons. Make sure to check it out. You can see it everywhere. You see What's Happening America, What's Happening Idaho, and any of our other syndicated programs. But it's a lot of fun. And it's aimed to be a little bit more humorous and kind of make fun of a lot of the ridiculous stuff that Congress does and other people around the country who are influential do. So make sure to check it out. We'll get back to the program now. All right. Thanks. Joining us in this segment, we have Harmeet Dhillon joining us, and she is running for the RNC chairmanship against Ronna McDaniel. Harmeet, how are you?
I'm well. Thank you.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us. We've had a lot of stuff happening recently. But I'll go ahead and let Lauren take over and start with her unique questions.
Well, first of all, it's nice to see you again. You probably don't remember me, but we met at the Kootenai Republican Women's event, and I snapped a picture with you. Real quick, Ronna is currently spending millions of dollars on luxury travel. I'm wondering how much you're going to budget in the RNC for your knitting gear.
Well, I think my husband has already cut me off from buying any more knitting gear. And so if I do, it'll be on my own dime. The luxury travel you reference is one issue. It's actually a small amount of, I think, the wasteful spending that we're doing at the RNC that really needs to be reconfigured.
Absolutely. I agree. So I crowdsource some questions through Twitter to ask you. And a big sentiment I was getting was, what is her position on certain things? You don't really have to go into it real deeply, but just roll off the cuff. You went to Arizona. You were on the ground with Carrie Lake. I watched the trial the first day. I saw the recap of it all. Do you think that was a fraudulent election?
Well, I do think that the election was run inconsistently with Arizona law. I also think that, you know, the standard at the Supreme Court for election contests is really, you really have to raise issues in a timely manner. And this is not Carrie Lake's fault. But the reality is that since we saw the Maricopa County elections 2 years ago, which also involved some of the same types of issues, and nothing was really done legally to get an injunction to force, for example, Maricopa County to test the machines in the voting centers using ballots printed in the voting centers. That's a big issue. Or, you know, even ask the question, hey, are you printing the ballots on the same size that they're supposed to be that the machines can read? You know, it's an area of the law that needs to be reformed, because if you file a lawsuit right before the election, the court's going to say your case is not ripe. If you file a lawsuit after the election, the court's going to say it's moot. So the particular code that Carrie's legal team at trial chose to pursue had a pretty high hurdle under Arizona law. You had to prove that a specific election official made specific actions, you know, maliciously, really. And the result of that was specific voters did not vote, with the result that so many of them did not vote that it changes the outcome of the election. Proving that in a case of 5 or 10 votes is very different than proving that in a case of 17,000. You have to bring a lot of voters to the court to prove all of those elements. Now, you know, our firm also did worked for Abe Hamadeh, who had a contest in Mojave County under a different standard, which is a lower standard. And even there, you know, the court was basically, it's an insurmountable hurdle. So if I were an Arizona legislator, I would suggest that a few changes to Arizona law be made, including if you're the Secretary of State, you have to recuse yourself from any election in which you're a party, not just you're running for Secretary of State. That's a loophole in the law. And I would also change those standards to not make it virtually impossible for a candidate to win an election contest on the basis of, I would call, gross irregularities and perhaps even intentional misconduct by Maricopa County officials. They knew that Republicans were going to be more likely than Democrats to vote on Election Day, and they took little care to ensure that the election officials were properly trained, that the machines worked on the ballots that were printed, or any of that. And they were even, in fact, mocking at the trial of people who dared to take their chances of voting on Election Day. So all of that just makes me shake my head and say we need a lot of changes in our election laws.
I agree. And speaking of, yesterday it came out that your lawsuit got the subpoena removed from the J6 committee for Trump. I was curious about your thoughts on the 2020 election.
Well, let's start with the subpoena. And the exact sequence is the subpoena was issued late in the January 6th process. And then our law firm filed a preliminary injunction or motion to quash, rather, in Florida. And the January 6th committee could have accepted that and gone into court and fought about it. They didn't. They let the time run out. So to be very clear, they actually had no interest in having a court rule on the appropriateness of the subpoena. In other words, the subpoena was for show. And so that just goes to show you the entire committee was for show. The only appropriate purpose of a select committee, any committee at Congress, to have a hearing is for proposed legislation. They didn't propose any legislation. They're not a grand jury, and they cannot violate the separation of powers that way. The election in 2020 was haphazard and, you know, really bad from a number of different perspectives. Election integrity laws were loosened. Democrats and Republicans did that as governors and as courts. And I think that had really had a negative impact on people's confidence in the election. And so I'd say that the way that the election was run in several swing states was terrible. And the Supreme Court should have taken up, example, for a minimum, the Pennsylvania challenge that really went to the fundamental issue of whether the state legitimately issued mail ballots to people where the state constitution didn't allow for that. In Wisconsin, there were gross irregularities with the use of no excuse absentee balloting, where the state law requires an excuse, for example, for people to be medically incapacitated to be able to take advantage of that. In Detroit, our observers were blocked from being able to observe the election. In Arizona, there were irregularities in Maricopa, the largest county, in things like the use of magic markers or, you know, pens that bled through the papers in Nevada, the Zuckerbucks people, you know, and in Georgia as well, they simply in Democrat counties, you know, didn't do any signature matching. They turned down the dial for the signature matching software to nothing. So yeah, I think that was a irregular election. However, there still remain ways to challenge those things. Could we have possibly anticipated all of those issues in advance? Well, maybe some of them, but not others. And the reality is that Republicans have not invested in election litigation and even an order of magnitude as well as with the Democrats. And so, you know, we have a lot to catch up on. And this is one of the reasons I'm running for chair of the RNC.
So we passed a $1.7 trillion omnibus bill, and Mitch McConnell came out and said that our priority number one is Ukraine. What are your thoughts on the Ukraine?
Well, I think if we had spent $10 billion to build the wall on the southern border, I would have considered that money well spent. I think, you know, billions to Ukraine, which, as we all know, if we're paying attention, was deeply implicated in the Hunter Biden and Joe Biden corruption scandal. We seem to be giving money to oligarchs and their wives are going on shopping sprees in Paris while Americans are not going on shopping sprees. We can't even afford gas and medication at the same time, many American families. So I think that omnibus bill and the Republicans who went along with it, they really slapped the American voter in the face. I don't understand that. And I think we have to do better as a Republican Party in holding people accountable.
One more. What were your thoughts on the COVID pandemic and the vaccines?
Well, I was the lawyer in the United States who filed the most lawsuits to challenge COVID shutdowns. We won three of those cases that my nonprofit brought to the United States Supreme Court over the rights of evangelical Christians and other people of faith to be able to pray in California without government interference. So I feel very strongly that major civil rights and human rights violations occurred in that case. And we represented Daily Wire with respect to the vaccine mandate on larger employers in the United States. And we were, you know, successfully part of the many lawsuits that eliminated that, struck down that requirement. I don't think anybody in America should ever be forced to take a drug, experimental or otherwise, to keep their job. But you'll be surprised to learn that that wasn't a function of COVID. Republicans and Democrats have presided over equal employment opportunity commissions that even under Trump and under Obama and everybody, they all have required for many years that if an employer asks you to take a vaccine and it's a condition of your employment, that's not something that you can sue over. I think that's shocking, and Republicans should make it a priority to say that nobody should be required to give up their articles of faith or take an experimental drug, or frankly, take a non-experimental drug to keep their jobs. We should be entitled to bodily autonomy in that regard.
Great. Off to Josh.
Army, I think every answer you gave so far, people in Idaho and across the United States that are conservative are going to absolutely love. And you're 100% correct on the border. I actually just got back from El Paso and Ciudad Juarez. I was reporting as an independent journalist for Rebel News. And while I was down there, I saw a lot of things that were shocking. But the reoccurring theme I saw, because, you know, if you look at the mainstream media's narrative and how they approach it, they're going to call it a humanitarian crisis. And it is. I mean, I was out there middle of desert, right, in the middle of winter. And there were babies crying that were sleeping on the ground with their parents. And the overall recurring theme that I saw was it is a humanitarian crisis. And the most humane thing we could do is secure our border to prevent people from trying to come into the United States illegally. So I do appreciate that you touched on that. Really, I'm going to have the standard questions for you here real quick. And then we'll have you go ahead and get about everything else that you have, because I'm sure you have a million things to do. Why is it important that the people of Idaho and the people across the United States contact their delegates for the national convention and tell them to vote for you?
Well, first I want to say that a lot of members of the RNC, including myself, are very happy to hear from voters, and quite a few of them aren't very happy to hear from voters. So know your audience before you reach out. I think your chair is one of those who's quite happy to hear from voters and respects the grassroots. So it's important if you're a Republican to have a Republican National Committee that fights to win. And I'm not trying to point any fingers here or say anybody's pulling their punches. I just don't think we're fighting to win. And I don't know if that's a function of capability or intent, but it isn't happening. And it hasn't happened in three successive election cycles. And so I think that, you know, what I've heard from some of my fellow members in red states is, what do you mean, Harmeet? We're a red state. We had a great year this year. Well, you're not going to have such a great year when you have judges who are not being stopped by Republican blocking majority or even parity in the United States Senate, who are overriding your laws, overriding your election laws, overriding your ability to pass laws in your states that protect your citizens. It is a real problem. We just lost that ability in the United States Senate. So it isn't free to lose elections. You don't just get an A for effort when you knocked on more doors or you flew more miles or you turned out more voters. If we didn't win, we didn't win. It's a zero-sum game. So I don't think it is impossible for us to win at all. I think we need fresh leadership, new ideas, a fresh approach, and that's going to be really important.
Yeah. What's going to be the key differences between a Harmeet chairmanship versus a Ronna McDaniel current that we have chairmanship?
Well, there's two aspects of that. One is outward facing that most people see, and one is inward facing that members see. Outward facing, I think that we may need much stronger communications. And I don't mean focus group by some comms expert that we're paying $800,000 to. I'm talking about just being very clear about what our core principles are. And they aren't that hard. I mean, to distinguish ourselves from Democrats is a relatively easy job if you are not distracted by Russia hoax or January 6th hoax or whatever it is, you know, like propaganda, and you're focusing on your own affirmative message, which is our duty. Like, we don't have the White House right now, so we can't rely on President Trump or any other leader of the party to be our messenger. We have to articulate our own message. We have a platform. The platform is the core principles of the party as defined by the Republican National Convention delegates. And that's our platform. It seems pretty clear. I never heard the word platform really out of the current leadership. It's something we shy away from. I think we should embrace it. If you don't like it, change it in the next election, but we have to embrace that. We have to be adapting to these new ways of voting, whether we like them or not. That's a fact. We have to be able to prepare to take advantage of early voting, absentee voting, ballot harvesting, and in most states that do ballot, early ballots and vote by mail, curing ballots. That's how we've won some close elections in California, of all places, where even red states have lost seats. So I think that's just get smart. If we get into power, we can change those laws to laws that we feel are more secure. But until we do, we have to deal with the laws that we have.
Perfect.
I think fundraising and spending are both problems right now. But when you don't have the White House, it's harder. We've been relying entirely on President Trump's name and likeness. But now that he's a candidate, and now that, you know, we don't have the White House, that becomes less of a draw, frankly. The fundraising that we do right now involves a lot of the small dollar donations come from renting lists. The lists are being rented from political consultants who take as much as 90% of the money raised. So if a patriot gets an email saying, please help President Trump now, or please help secure the border or whatever, fill in the blank, they don't know that $1 is getting through and $9 is getting sent into the pocket of a multimillionaire political consultant. That's wrong. That's not how the Democrats raise money. We cannot raise our money that way. It's going to take some leadership, because believe me, in the building of the RNC and outside the building of the RNC, the ecosystem in Washington depends on this cash cow really ripping off our donors. And believe me, when this race got ugly in the RNC, when I said, let's audit our vendors and our consultants and see where the money is going, suddenly there was a primal scream from DC and everyone went on attack on me. The way we spend money is also problematic. Now, it is fine if you're rich to go fly private jets and line your home with flowers and buy expensive candles and, you know, Chinese workout gear. It's not fine to do it with donor money. But like I said before, those few million dollars of expenses are trivial compared to blowing money on consultants who don't do a good job and they keep getting hired again and again. Some of the top leadership working in the building, I'm not talking about our elected leadership, but staff, they've never had a job outside the RNC. They're in their 30s. They're making, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And there's no business sense. There's no concept of comparison shopping to get the best value, which all of us who have businesses do. And really, it's all about me and, you know, getting rich quick and not about Republicans winning elections. And that's problematic. And I'm not even sure our top elected leadership even knows about some of this stuff. I hear about it through the grapevine. And I think we got to put a stop to it. An audit would help with that. Our budget. So let's talk about inwardly. The way this RNC is run, and it has been for many years, I mean, this was the first contested leadership election in 12 years at the RNC, believe it or not. People are anointed and then they just keep going. We have a very small group of members who have any say in what's going on at the RNC. And then the rest of us don't have any say. You know, I'm talking, you know, at the executive committee level, very little comes before the executive committee vote. The budget committee doesn't get a line item budget. I compare that to my own state party, where I'm on the board of the state party. We get a line item budget. Now, we don't distribute it to the press because we don't need Democrats to know how we're spending our money. But inside the party, we know. We keep it confidential, but we know. You can't even question a budget if you don't see it. And so we're not getting to see it. We have ad hoc committees to, I think, placate some members who are concerned about grassroots or election integrity. We produce reports. They don't go anywhere. So this kind of top-down, tightly controlled way, I think, is at odds with our Republican values, which should really be bottom-up and involving people. And I'll give you the example of media. Many of your viewers may have seen me on television on Fox News. I'll be on Fox News, you know, later today. And so I'm a, you know, well-known communicator in the party, but I've never been booked by the, you know, the RNC's media team on any television interviews. So that's kind of bizarre. And I'm not the only one. There are people on the RNC who have their own television shows in their states. They have their own radio shows. They're outstanding communicators. They have podcasts. They're not being asked to communicate on behalf of the party, which we are. Almost all of us are volunteers. We do it for free. I do it for free. I don't get paid for my television advocacy for Republican causes. So we have people who are finance experts, people who are CEOs, people who are multimillionaires, people who are tremendous fundraisers. None of them are being asked to harness their excellent skills in favor of the party for control reasons. So that would change under my leadership. It would be much less hierarchical and much flatter organizational structure, and inviting people to really participate in a realistic way, not just to make work.
Well, I love everything you've said. Like I said, here in Idaho, I actually started a petition for us as the state party, because I'm actually a central committee member. I'm also state committeeman for my county. I started a petition for us to put pressure, applied pressure from the state level on our national three people that we have. So we are working on that here. I am excited to see new leadership. And frankly, if I may, I have to say, right now more than ever, I think we need new, fresh leadership, especially approaching this next election. You know, with Donald Trump being on True Social and not getting outside of that echo chamber, I think that causes a lot of problems. I also, we've seen kind of a shift where we've seen President Trump is now becoming more, you know, of a polished politician. And we have people like Ron DeSantis, who may potentially run as well, trying to be more Trump-like. So I think it's going to be an interesting primary for who's going to be the GOP nominee. But I think we need that fresh leadership that's going to get behind them and really elevate whoever it is so that we can win. And I think that we've had a lot of failures. We've had a lot of candidates. I mean, even in Arizona, I think that there should have been more done for Blake Masters. I think that there seemed to be a almost trend of not helping the conservatives in the Republican Party. And at the end of the day, look, I lean more conservative, right? I love our, and I love that you talked about the platform. In Idaho, our platform is quite a bit more conservative than the national one. So, you know, I do lean more conservative. And look, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if you lean more conservative or less conservative. Once you have a Republican nominee, you have to do everything you can to elevate and get those seats. And I just think we felt so. I look forward to your leadership.
Can I piggyback real quick? I got a question for you. We spent money, RNC, not we, RNC spent money actively against conservative candidates throughout this last election cycle. Do you plan to do anything like that in the future? I hope not.
Well, I think that's not right. And I just heard that from another state party chair who called me a few minutes ago, and he told me about that. And I was disappointed to hear that. We have a lot of these, I would call them shady political consultants, who have no shame taking money from one side and then with the other hand, taking money from the other side. That's wrong. But even beyond that, if you just look at it from like the corporate ESG perspective, and you look at why are we giving money to law firms that are promoting ranked choice voting measures in states?
Absolutely.
That's not helpful to us. Why are we giving money for our fundraising to Stripe, which is our back-end credit card processor, which gives a lot of money to liberal causes that tear us down? Why? They're choices. Why are we using vendors who, you know, don't adhere to our values? Why are we banking with, I'm just giving it, throwing it out there, why are we banking with any banking company or doing business with companies that promote drag queen shows for children? Like, these are some basic values. I'm not saying that's happening, but I'm saying that if you had a top-down leadership I mean, if you had a moral core to how you invest your money or how you spend your money, like I do at my law firm, I try consciously to buy products made in the United States. I try consciously to support, you know, businesses that are, you know, sharing my values. We try to do that and be very careful about that. And I think it's not expensive to do that. It simply requires a moral framework that you really view the world in that way. Believe me, the Democrats are not spending money with businesses that are pro-life or that promote conservative values. And so why are we sleeping with the enemy, so to speak?
Absolutely. Harmeet, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it. I would encourage everybody to, again, contact your representatives at the national committee level, your state chairman, chairwoman, and just apply kind pressure, not heavy, but kind pressure, and let them know that we need fresh leadership. We need Harmeet. All right. Thank you. All right. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today. Wasn't that a fire interview? She answered amazing.
Oh, I loved it. She answered exactly what I like, especially about the topics that is on everyone's mind. I mean, she answered all the fraudulent ones, like with legal ease. And then she answered, you know, like her feelings about like COVID and the Ukraine stuff. I love that. And then her vision is fantastic. And, you know, and we need her. We need fresh blood. Needs to happen.
And she tolerated my tangents I go on.
Yeah, I was like, oh, well, I need to know why Blake Masters had money spent against him. I need to know why, you know, Murkowski got money and then her opponent didn't when they were the two, you know, running in Alaska. Like, I just don't understand. Like, I need a guarantee that our Republican Party in the future is not going to spend money against conservative candidates. It's absolutely bananas.
Well, it was in Alaska. It's kind of what she was talking about with that ranked choice voting. It's absolutely horrible. And you're absolutely correct. As a matter of fact, one of them votes like a Democrat that the RNC was supporting over a conservative. So anyways, well, I think, oh, go ahead.
So refreshing. Just so refreshing. Oh, it's so nice to talk to somebody on, you know, in the same value system as us and conservative level. And she wants to bring, that's a huge problem even in our party in the state, is like coming back to those core principles of the Republican Party, like holding people's feet to the fire for the actual, you know, written doctrine of the Republican Party. And she said that too at the beginning. She's like, we got to bring it back. You know, yeah. We're circling back, as Psaki says, right? Yep. So she's gonna come back to the core. And from there, you know, and then I couldn't believe the budget. She said that they wouldn't let them see the line budgets. They didn't have line budgets like they do in the States. I was like, that's alarming.
Yeah.
That's alarming.
It's insane. Yeah. Well, on that note, let's go ahead and wrap up. I want to thank you guys for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed that interview, and we will talk to you guys again next week. We're going to have Roger Stone joining us.
Roger Stone. Yeah.
So great episodes to continue to come. So make sure to tune in, make sure to subscribe wherever you can. Most importantly, Rumble, because at the end of the day, YouTube will be kicking us off. We keep kind of pushing. Lauren keeps pushing. It's all her fault. So we are going to get kicked off YouTube eventually. So make sure you're following us on Rumble as well. If you're listening to the podcast, the video experience is 10 times better. So go there or go to our website, idahospodcast.com, and we will talk to you guys again next time.
You've been listening to What's Happening America. If it's happening in the conservative world in the national news, we're talking about it. We have opinions about it, and we have guests to talk about it. Bold, funny, and true conservatives. We hope you've enjoyed the show. If you did, make sure to like, rate, and review. We'll be back soon. But in the meantime, make sure to hit us up on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, and Facebook at What's Happening America, and find the website at idahospodcast.com. See you next time on What's Happening America.